Hello, I'm Paddy O'Brien, originally from Gortaneden, Kiel, County Kerry, the slopes of Sliabhmish Mountains.
You have been living in Cork for the last number of years, Paddy, but you're originally a Kiel man. Tell us some memories of you growing up in Kiel.
Well, like everywhere, it has changed a lot in the 40 whatever years since I left at 45, I think. But growing up, I suppose farming, everybody, there was the small farms were strong back then. Going to the creamery, I remember doing that, or the creamery, as a lot of lads would have said. And football, of course, football everywhere in Kerry. So Kiel, we had the mountains above us, the River Main and the sea south of us, and on West Teen Strand then. So it was a lovely place to grow up in, I have to say that.
Mm-hmm. It's a very small community at the moment. I remember years ago, even when I was younger, MJ Ladin's shop used to be opened. That was a great place to get penny sweets.
Correct, yeah. There were, well, I suppose this was true everywhere out the country long ago, that there were more small shops because people walked, or the lucky ones cycled, but most people had to walk to the shop for the messages. Mm-hmm. So they'd have their two bags, so they'd have to go every second day or so, or every third day, and bring a certain amount of stuff. So there were more shops, there were a number of shops, O'Connor's, as we just said, in Kiel, next to the school, that was one, and there were ones dotted along that road at different intervals along the way. Back at Fybuck, my aunt ran the post office and had a little shop there for years and years. That'd be...
I didn't even know there was a shop there.
Well, the post office is closed now and all that, but this just west of where the old school is in Fybuck, on the other side of the road, that was Fybuck Post Office. Mick Spring was my uncle and all my cousins, and one, my cousin Mick, Michael, is still living there. So that was a shop and post office. But Trance at the Whitegate Crossroads was a big, for its time, a big industry, a big shop doing a big trade. So, yeah, we'd walk to the shop, of course, yeah.
And I suppose when you were obviously in your teens or whatever, you were told, I'll go on over to get the messages now and you'll be off all over, would you?
Oh, yeah, I'd say even younger than that. I'd say around fourth, fifth, sixth class. There were a way less cars on the road. Mm. So, and you had plenty of time to go. There was no time limit on it, really. So the old bags of stuff would be kind of heavy for a young lad, you know, but sure, you could put them down and take a rest. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
It was building up the muscle for you.
It did, I suppose, yeah. I suppose it did, Kaya, yeah.
So we were talking about Cathair Cunree as a mountain, and you know a bit about Cathair Cunree. So
I do, indeed. Like I said, sure, we grew up with the mountains to our back, so I got a load of the stories, the names of the mountains. Every inch of it was named long ago, just like the fields. So at the back of us at home in Gortaneden, the name Gortaneden even means the slope, or the field on the brow of the hill, Gortaneden. And behind that you would have Molloig, Dromail, Lachin, Carrig, Glaunlahan, Lyre, all Irish names with a meaning. And then back above them you had Bartrigaum, the top of the three valleys, and west of that again, farther away from us again, was Cathair Cunree. And I found out somewhere during primary school time, I'd say, that there was a king that lived on Cathair Cunree. And I got curious, and I can't remember where I heard the story first, but it stayed in my head. And then I suppose I read it in a book after that, and then I started telling it myself when I started telling stories in my 20s. And it's a fantastic story. The story of Cunree was his name. Cunree Mac Daira. And the mountain peak then takes its name from Cunree. Cathair Cunree means the stone fort of Cunree.
Very good. Okay. Would you mind telling us that story?
I'll give you, if I told you all of it, you'd need three programmes, but I'll give you the bones of it.
Enough.
And we might get around to recording it properly some other time. In fact, I have a plan that sometime I will climb up from... We're here in camp now looking up at it, and that I'm going to bring a group of people and do the claim and tell the story up at the top at the place where it's supposed to have happened and record it up there. I'd love to do that sometime. But anyway...
I'd love to join you first.
Well, fantastic. Sure, there's an invite. Now I can't turn that down. Cunree Mac Daira was a warrior king that lived in Munster. Now, like all these stories from pre-Christian times, from Celtic times... They're They're full of myth, they're full of legend, they're full of unbelievable stuff, because a load of it is made up. There probably is a bit of truth behind a lot of the stories, and a lot of the ancient warriors, be they men or women, because the women had superpowers as well, they're descendants of the Celtic gods, so they're able to do magic things as well as human things. So Kuri Mac Daira. Daira was one of the ancient gods or goddesses of ancient Ireland. So Kuri, having royal or god's blood in him, had kind of supernatural powers, like Fionn MacCool, like Cú Chulainn. That he's equally in. And it's funny how he dropped out of the telling, because every primary school child in Ireland, I'd say, gets to know about Fionn MacCool and about Cú Chulainn, especially the story of Cú Chulainn, how he got his name about killing the hound. And Kuri kind of dropped out. And I was amazed when I heard the story, because it's a powerful story. And I'll tell it short now. Cú Chulainn is up in Ulster, and he decides to raid the Isle of Man, because there's treasure, there's supposed to be great treasures in the castle there. But when he goes to raid the Isle of Man, it's protected by magic rings of fire, the castle is, and Cú Chulainn fails to capture the castle on his first go. So he goes looking for help, he comes down to Munster, he goes to the top of that mountain over there, and he makes a deal with Kuri Mac Daira, whom he knows about, another warrior, a famous warrior like himself. If you help me on this raid, what deal will we make? And Kuri said, if you give me the first of the treasure, give me the first choice. Cú Chulainn said, no problem. They went, they captured the castle this time at night, and there's great bits in the story about how Kuri Mac Daira dealt with the wheels of flame that were guarding the castle. They stole a load of... Now, there are loads of different versions of the story, but in the version that I tell, they stole loads of treasure, gold, silver, jewels, and they also stole the king of the Isle of Man's daughter. Her name was Blanid. Blanid, after, because she was as beautiful as any flower. And when they got back to Éire, and they started dividing up the treasure as agreed, and it was morning time now, and they both saw this Blanid, and she was absolutely beautiful, and they both fell in love with her. And Kuri Mac Daira said, that's the first thing that he wanted. Pardon me using the word thing now, but the first of what they captured that he wanted. And Cú Chulainn said, oh no, she's not in the deal at all. We said treasure, we did not. We said just the first. And one word borrowed another, and they lost their temper. And they fought for 3 days and three nights to see who would win the hand of Blanid. And she was delighted. Two warriors fighting to win her hand. After the 3 days, the morning of the fourth day, Kuri Mac Daira got the upper hand, and he was in a fierce temper now, because he felt that Cú Chulainn had broken his word. So he, not alone did he defeat, they didn't fight with weapons, they fought just with their hands, but they were able to do damage. So he knocked Cú Chulainn onto the ground, and then he reached over to where he had left his weapons, and he picked up his knife, and Cú Chulainn thought for a moment, this is the end for me. But no, what he did was, he cut off Cú Chulainn's long hair. And the warriors back then, the sign of manhood was your long shiny hair, and they loved to wear it long and show it off to the women and everything. So he shaved him a very bad shave of all his long hair. You young lads nowadays pay a lot of money for cuts like that, with bits of fancy little curly cues and the shaved heads and things, but this was totally unintended. There was clumps of hair sticking out at all sides. Then he stuck Cú Chulainn's head down onto the ground, and he picked up a big fish of cow dung. A big wet fresh cow dung that was up there and near the beach, and he smeared it all over his head just to insult him. And then he gave him a good kick in the backside, and he landed him into a bog hole upside down, and Cú Chulainn nearly got drowned. Cú Chulainn was ashamed. He went away and hid for a year. He was so ashamed of the defeat that had been put on him. Kuri Mac Daira meanwhile took all the treasure and the woman back down to Kerry. He came back through, I'm guessing, where Castlemaine is now. And when he came about as far as Whitegate's crossroad, he turned north and back up the mountains and up to the place that now bears his name, where he lived on top of the hill, which is now called Cathair Cunraí. herself didn't like it at all. He was hoping she'd fall in love with him, you see. She didn't like it a bit, and she was only waiting for a chance to escape. But he had soldiers on guard. He had warriors on guard. And he was hoping she'd change her mind and maybe fall in love. Meanwhile, Cuchulainn was above an Ulster, and his heart was burning with the tint of revenge. He washed himself a lot in the month or two after his defeat, for various reasons, as you can imagine.
Of course.
Because he was still psychologically damaged from the cow dung and the defeat. His hair grew. A year later, he was ready to come back. And down to Kerry he came. And herself, Blanin, was above. And she wasn't locked into a room or anything, but modern day version of it now was she was kind of under house arrest, and she wasn't a bit happy. She was being well treated. She was getting the best of food, nice clothes, everything, but she just wanted out. And actually what had happened was, when the two boys were fighting a year ago, the one she hoped would win would be Cuchulainn, because she fancied the look of Cuchulainn. He was what the lads down in Cork would call, he was a bit of a lasher, like, you know. Whereas the poor old Coorie, you know, he was a bit rough. Big, strong man and everything, but a bit rough to look at. So anyway, Cuchulainn arrived. He camped down at the butt of the mountain somewhere where there's a stream going by and a little pool. So he'd have water to wash and water to cook. And he sent a message with a young lad secretly up to the Queen on top of the hill. Tell her I'm here. Tell her what should I do. And the boy went up, gave the message in secret, got the message back, and the message that came back down to Cuchulainn was, you're at the exact right spot in that pool where you're camped, beside your camp in that pool. There is a magic salmon, and that magic salmon contains the spirit of Cúri Máchtáire. The salmon and Cúri are twins in spirit. If you can capture and kill the salmon, you'll have half of Cúri's power and you'll be halfway towards defeating him. So Cuchulainn waited for weeks and weeks, and he was giving up in the end. He thought she was cutting him. But one morning, didn't he see the salmon swimming around, and he got his fishing spear with the three prongs, and he waited and he killed the salmon. And as soon as he killed the salmon, he could feel the power coming into his body, and he knew then that Blanid was not cutting him, that she was not making stuff up, that what she said was true. So he sent the boy back up the following day to tell her that that job was done, the salmon was dead, what to do next. And she sent a very, what they'd call in the modern day, a cryptic answer down to him. Wait till the stream turns white, then attack. Wow. So he said, fair enough, I don't know exactly what that means, but I will wait. She then started on her part of the plan. She started praising Cúri Máchtáire altogether, like how great a warrior he was, how great a fighter he was, and of course, he being in Kerry, how great a footballer he was, you know. And he thought she was changing her mind, and didn't the fool fall for it? And she said, I'd marry you now tomorrow if we had a better house to live in, a better castle than this one. This old place is drafty and cold and old. Why don't you collect fine stones and build for me a palace befitting a king of your status? Wasn't that well said? Mm. So what did he do, the Egypt? He sent all his warriors off, collecting big, tall, standing stones to build a new castle, probably beside the one that he had already built. So now he had hardly anyone left to guard him. That was part one of her plan. Part two, she made a big dinner for him one evening, cooked a fine big meal, and he didn't know it all, but the wine they were having, he was having cups of wine with his meal. She was after putting a sleeping powder into it. And she thought two or three of these will knock him out now, but this was Cúri Máchtáire. It took eight or nine, around the ninth one, the eyes were closing, and he was full up of food, and he was sleepy enough anyway. And he said, Kamedolli. So she took him up the steps into the bed. It was up in a kind of a high corner. It had goalposts like the corners of a four-poster bed. And the minute his head hit the pillow, he was sound asleep. And this is the nastiest bit of all of the story, I think. He had the long hair, like I said, they all used to wear. She made two car ropes, two plaits of the hair, and tied it around the bedpost nearest his head, so that even if he woke up, he'd be tied onto the bed and he'd be hindered, like he wouldn't be able to fight. And then he used to have a sword, a short sword, under his pillow every night for protection. She took that and she threw it out the narrow window. Down she went into the courtyard of the Caislean then, and she went over to the dairy and she took two buckets of milk and cream and she poured them into the well. And the water from that well was flowing out of the castle down the side of the mountain and down past the place into the lake or the pond where Cú Chulainn was waiting. And of course the milk and cream turned the water white. The white water flowed down the mountain. Cú Chulainn saw the white water. Up he went. And because the king was incapacitated in several ways, even though it still took him a good while, about a 3-hour fight, eventually he got the fatal blow into Cúrí Mac Dáire, and he killed Cúrí Mac Dáire. But the minute he had killed him, a total change came over Cú Chulainn, and he realised that he had done a very foul deed, a very bad thing, and he was immediately sorry for what he did. He forgot all about the treasure. He was going to steal everything back. He didn't even care about the treasure anymore. But he still was in love with Blanet. So he grabbed her by the hand and they just ran out of there, down the hill, got into his chariot and hit back for however many days' journey it would be, 3 or 4 days, I don't know how long, to get back up to County Antrim or up to Ulster where he lived. Didn't know at all that he had been witnessed committing his murder. There was an old poet and harp player called Ferkertne, and they're great names. Mm-hmm. Ferkertne saw Cúrí being murdered, and Ferkertne very quietly and very stealthily and very sneakily followed Cú Chulainn and Blanet back up into Ulster. He camped quietly every night. He lit no fire. He cooked no food. He only ate raw food. But for an old man, he managed to keep up with him. This was his, going to be his last deed if it killed him, to get revenge. And Cú Chulainn and Blanet were standing somewhere in County Antrim, I don't know the exact location, looking across to Scotland, because it isn't far away at all there, you can see it very clearly. They were probably planning, or Cú Chulainn anyway in his head was thinking of getting away from Ireland altogether. Such was his shame because of the murder he had committed, and that he'd take himself and Blanet over to Scotland and they'd start a new life over there. Neither the two of them, the day was bad like this, neither the two of them, the rain was rattling off the roof, but neither the two of them saw or heard the old man sneaking up behind them, Ferkertne. And he'd have done, his plan was to, almost like a rugby tackle, to gwall the two of them off the top of the cliff and himself and kill all three of them. But when he was about 2 steps away from Cú Chulainn, he gave a shout, "Revenge for Cúrí Mac Dáire, Díoltas the Cúrí," and he leapt with the last of his strength. But Cú Chulainn, being a warrior and being agile, being a sportsman, automatically he was able to do a kind of a sidestep, and Ferkertne missed him, but he caught Blanet, and the two of them tumbled down off the cliff and were killed on the rocks below. And there stood Cú Chulainn on top of the cliff in County Antrim, and his heart was broken and his spirit was sore, because he knew he had lost the woman he loved, and he knew he had killed a king who was one of the bravest and best fighters he had ever met. She named a scale, Tá Bréaga Ann agus Bíoc. And the thing I like about this story is, well, we're sitting here now in camp at Ash's coffee shop, and Cathair Cymru is up there, in spite of the rain, we can see it. It is still there. And the river that flows down from it is crossing the road about a half a mile east of here. And this is the best bit. The river is still called An Fionn Glaise. And Fionn Glaise means the white stream.
Wow. Thank you, Paddy. Thank you very much for sharing that. It's amazing, the stories that are out there you don't realise.
Oh, it's a great story. And I love the ones that have a link with the place.
Yeah,
you know, I heard somebody lately telling the version. And you see, that's what happened as well. There are loads of, there are versions, stories about Cúrí. Cúrí is mentioned a lot in the Ulster stories as a kind of an extra character that comes into it. And there's one brilliant story about him. He challenges 3 warriors to see which of them is the bravest, and the challenge is, if I let you cut my head off, will you give me the same chance after? And of course the boys think, yeah, because when you want to cut your head off, there'll be no comeback. So the first warrior takes out the sword and takes the head off Cúrí. Now Cúrí was in disguise, they didn't know who this stranger was, so the head is on the ground. So if it was, Cúrí just puts down his hand and puts his head back on. And your man is looking at him like, no, says Cúrí, it is my turn. Your man says, no, I'm backing out of it. The second lad gets the same chance again, he chops off his head, hoping that second time lucky. And Cúrí puts the head back on again. And the second warrior Funk's the bargain. And the third warrior is our friend Cú Chulainn, young Cú Chulainn, and he chops off the head of Cúri, and when Cúri takes off the head and puts it back on, Cú Chulainn kneels down in front of him and pulls the shirt off his neck and offers him his neck for his own head to be chopped off. And Cúri then reveals himself as, you know, one of the gods or one of the half-gods, mm-hmm. and declares that Cú Chulainn is the bravest of all the warriors in Ireland. So that's another link with the stories.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's great to tell these stories.
Ah, they're fantastic. And I'm not an expert. Like, there are loads of them. That we, like I said earlier, some of them get told in schools and get told. There are still our storytelling festivals. I'll be telling stories in Sneem in November now. There's a nice festival down there. Bat Burns runs it. So stories are still being told. But there are loads of them. Like, they're the wealth of stories and the fantastic stories. When I was teaching and I'd be talking about Cú Chulainn or Fionn McCool or any of those stories, I used to say to the lads that these guys were like the Superman or the Hulk of our imagination, you know, and their stories are just as fantastic and even more fantastic because, like I said, the places are here.
Yeah.
They're still here in Ireland.
And we're right next to Cathair Cymru, as you told that story as well, so you can really visualise it
exactly
in your head when you're talking
about it. And we'll go up there someday and we'll record it up there. The full version, 45 minutes.
As long as you can keep up with me being very slow on the mountain.
we'll wait till we get up and then we'll sit down, we'll have a picnic and we'll tell it.
Sounds beautiful. Thank you so much, Paddy.
You're
I really
so welcome.
Appreciate it.
A file to road.